Hi, everybody. David Donaldson here with another episode of Entrepreneurial Impact. We have Bo Minkiti joining us once again. He's becoming quite the regular on the show. Bo, welcome back.
Great to be here, Dave. It's great to be here with you.
You know, it's a sunny day as the sunny days of summer start to dissipate a little bit. We get to go through those morning chills, right? Take the sweatshirt off, right? Gets hot, and then we got to put it back on at the end of the day.
My ultimate favorite time. It's my favorite time of year, actually, the fall.
Fall.
You got the crispness that keeps you sort of alive. It reminds you that there's a chill of winter coming, but you still have the warmth of the sun and the bright sunny days. So as a New England kid who grew up with four seasons, this was my favorite season of them all.
Is one of mine, having, you know, an East Coast kid myself, however, spending 14 years in roaming the desert, I missed fall. And I, you know, that smell of fall in the air, the trees falling down around, there is a loss to that. And having that back in my life is quite enjoyable.
It's awesome.
Well, listen, Bo, we've had a lot going on, right? Mm-hmm. Business, interest rates, challenging times through business, especially, you know, on the real estate side, lawsuits and settlements. What does this mean for me? I wanted to talk today to kind of create a reset for the agents and the business owners, the brokers in our real estate side of the world, right? I think if we look back over 23 and 24, wow, it was kind of crazy, right? Interest rates, high as 8%, right? Historically low sales, although we're still seeing about 4 million transactions this year. People don't realize that, how many homes still sell, even though we're at a relatively low time, right? People reflecting back of the COVID years, how crazy it was, very unexpected, honestly, right? Maybe we did a little more harm to ourselves by dropping interest rates as aggressively and as rapidly as we did, because we've now created what, Joe will appreciate this because he loves this, and I'll say love and I'll put that in quotes, that people always say, hey, buy the house, you know, date the rate, marry the house. A lot of people right now are married to the rate. Right. And that's paralyzing a lot of people's decision about, hey, I've got a life event. So we're trying to get our arms around all of these things in the business world and keep having the right conversation. So I think it's important to, what are you seeing in current market conditions having come through the last 2 years and where we might be going in 25 and 26?
Yeah, Dave, I think it's interesting because, you know, the last couple of years have been, I think, a reminder to everybody that things change, that sort of things you know, but we know this logically, but I think sort of intuitively, emotionally, people don't always behave in a way that there are cycles in real estate. There are seasons. And so we've been in a challenging time, right? A lot of waiting this year, thinking interest rates were going to come down, thinking there's going to be movement. There was sort of this interesting sort of purgatory around, you know, are interest rates going to move? How's that going to affect what's going on? But life goes on, right? You know, people still, you know, get married, they get divorced, they have babies, people retire, people get married, families get created, people graduate from school and move to get a new job. All these things are still going on, right? And so we have the benefit of playing in an industry that is core to human life. You know, we don't sell, you know, extravagant vacations that people take only when they have the resources. We're selling a basic product called housing that everybody needs. And so the industry we're in has a resiliency to it in that it is based on human life. And that human life continues regardless of what the Fed does with interest rates, regardless of inflation. The core human life events keep happening. I think we've seen that. We've seen that there's a resiliency to this market and there's resiliency to our industry. So I think that's an important thing. I think as we look ahead, all the indicators suggest that, you know, hopefully we'll see some. You know, we might see more transactions. You know, I think most indicators suggest we'll see more transactions in 2025 than we did in 2024. Most economic indicators suggest that we'll see some easing of interest rates, nothing dramatic, but some reduction in interest rates. And I think that that, you know, although it was a catchy saying to say, you know, marry the house, date the rate, it does get at the idea that the house is a permanent thing driven by your lifestyle and your life's needs. And the rate is something that is a factor of macroeconomic conditions and that will change as the world around us changes.
Yeah, it's paralyzing how much you need to truly understand what moves a rate, what a rate truly means to somebody. And I get it. And we like to talk in historical averages. Well, 7% is the historical average. Okay, I get that over a long span. But when the recent historical average has been 5 or 5 below, people don't understand that. So that's a radical shift when you go from 5 or sub 5, right, all the way down into the low 3s and 2s for a while, and then spike it so quickly up to 3 because we have to kind of offset some inflation, right? Yeah. And people go, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah, but I think the whoa, what just happened probably has to have this, you know, things are never as good as you think they are, and they're never as bad as you think they are. And so, you know, we aren't going back to 3% interest rates, I don't think, anytime soon. And so I think there's a whole, you know, slice of our industry that sort of grew up in that space. And it's like, oh, this is, you know, no, that's not normal. Like, that wasn't normal. And given where we are today, you know, 8-9% interest rates are not normal. Now, they could be normal in the future, as could, you know, a lot of things could happen. But right now, I think we're starting to head towards where interest rates should be, given where we are, right? Which is probably in the somewhere in the 5s, you know, low 6s kind of space. And I think that if we can start to orient ourselves to what that is, and where that might be, I think that that helps in what we're doing every day.
I think the challenge with that is that people are so locked in on a rate percentage. They don't do the equations or understand the ramifications that waiting can truly do to them, right? The other side of the coin, when I look back, you know, I was licensed in, I was blessed. I actually talked to them. I got my license in March of 07 in Phoenix, Arizona, right? So like, here I am 17 years later still doing this. So like, there's some of us that been around a while, right? But it was an incredible educational time to figure out how to do a lot of different things in a challenging market, right? Because there was an urge and a need and a desire to want to do that. Where we are now, financially speaking, for the real estate agents, the business owners, is similar because people are struggling, right? Financially speaking, on the other side, it's not the same because people have value, they have equity, right? The recession hasn't hit. We're kind of coming out. We're hoping we're coming out of this, out of inflation a little bit. People have insulated their costs because we learned from some of those fog and mirror get a rate type of experience. But really what's happening on the other side is because there is so few houses for sale. And the one bigger carryover from then is that we expect or understand that we need 1 million new homes a year, constructionally speaking. You want to talk about pumping the brakes, that all but stopped in 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, right? Last year, I think the number, we're approaching 700,000 new construction homes. So we're still sub 300 in just 1 year, compounded across the last decade and a half that we still have to make up for, right? So what happens without having all those homes available to buy, or the people that are getting divorced or having kids, or need to downsize because they're hitting 65 and older, right? People don't understand the value of the homes because there's such a low threshold of availability is going to continue to go up. And that offset loss between rates and home values is going to be more of a detriment to them while they wait and figure things out.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, I think everything shows that we're headed for, you know, maybe more positive housing market in the future, which but not addressing the major supply and demand question in this country. Like, we have a massive housing shortage, which is driving housing prices up. And so we have a lot of people sitting on the sidelines waiting for rates to go down by 50 basis points or something like that. Meanwhile, they're missing an asset that's, you know, appreciating at a much greater percentage in the marketplace. And so I think one of the key things for us as professionals is to be able to really outline that for our clients. So what does it mean to understand as interest rates, you know, go down, you're also against another pressure here, which is rising home prices. And so Are you able to get in and secure a property today? An interest rate's always going to be available to you in the future. That's one of the benefits, the way we do housing in this country. Unlike some of these commercial loans, you're not locking in your interest rate for forever. You can refinance your home at any time. And so this opportunity to, sure, there's some opportunity cost to that. There's some cost to that, some transactional cost to that. But, you know, realistically, the time frame in which you can readjust to the current interest rate environment is much more fluid and can be revisited. Whereas the time frame in which you can readjust to opportunity to buy a home at a great price and the place you want to be, that window can be a lot narrower.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So that whole mindset goes both ways, right? Our mindset and motivation as real estate agents are telling the story and educating the consumer, right? Being in front of the consumer on a regular baseline of communication, right? So their mindset and motivation changes about what the realistic applications are for them, right? So they can project. Because here's also what's happening is not only are they waiting, we used to say, hey, 5 to 7 years before people move. That's the baseline. We're now probably in that 9 to 10 year window because people are extending that out, right? Till they get comfortable that rates have settled down. All the while, values continue to go up. The other side of that coin, right, is employment. Employment is still strong. I'm not a fan of, hey, we're up 20%, we're down 20%, whether it's value or interest rates, right? We're up 20%, we're down 20%. Let's look at the real numbers. We're really strong in an economy. We're really strong in job growth. There's some confusion and challenge about what work looks like going forward, right? Where work's going forward, right? So if we talk about work from home, work on site, there's a balance, and I understand it, and I do think people are more effective working on site to a degree. However, when you do take in the side of the coin of cost economics, of where people can afford to live, are the businesses going to be where people can afford to live, or is telecommuting really here, and we have to look at it a little differently?
I think it's a really interesting question. You know, my general thought on that right now is that historically, you saw population move to where jobs were. And then people built housing there and created lifestyle amenities in the places where jobs. And we moved to this real live, work, play environment that people enjoy. Then we had COVID and people thought, well, maybe I can divorce the work from the live, play. And so maybe I really want to go live out in the mountains and, you know, I'm going to be able to telework so I could have a beautiful view and quick peace and quiet, and that's going to work. I think it's kind of, you know, we don't yet know exactly what the future of work looks like, right? But I think we know a couple of things. I think we know that great organizations will continue to be primarily physically based. And that doesn't mean that people have to go into an office 5 days a week and sit there, but it does mean that the human interaction experience is going to be part of an organization. And I think what we're seeing now, though, is something I think is really interesting, which is rather than people coming to live where the jobs are needing to go to where the people live and work. And you're seeing this really in the rise of some what might be deemed second tier cities, where there's a great cost of living, where there's a great quality of life and where people want to live. And that has become great places for major employers to relocate offices and locations because the availability of the labor pool is pretty tight. And so having high quality, you know, capable and happy employees is a big part of what's necessary to in the workforce today. So I think you're seeing that threaten the economies of some of the major cities that have for a long time have just relied on being major job centers as what makes them special.
You know, I watched this happen. I mentioned living in Arizona in 07, and part of the biggest problem in some of the areas like that was the incredible pace of outbound growth, almost leapfrogging too far, right? It wasn't just the commuting, because it really wasn't telecommuting. So there was a drive factor to that. But what really kind of set the table in a very delicate situation very quickly was that how far they went out with a lack of infrastructure. Hospitals, restaurants, movie theaters, even the roads themselves not being able to support the commute. Right. So I think there's a life lesson learned there that as the businesses go into the area, the people are there in pockets, right? So they're commercially following behind them, but with the mindset that, hey, we've been here before. As long as they recognize we've been here before.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. So how do you think, like Dave, how do you think as entrepreneurs, since we're on the Entrepreneurial Impact Podcast, right?
Well, thanks for the plug.
As entrepreneurs, how should we be thinking about our business in a time like this? How should we be? So what? So here's what's happening in the world. I always ask this question myself sometimes because I'm a little heady and nerdy, and I get like super interested in the numbers. I think some people don't want to pay attention to that. I think it's really important to pay attention to the macro numbers. But then I have to ask myself at some point, okay, so what's the tie? What's the link between what's happening in the world and what can I do? Because I don't really control what's happening in the world. I do control what I do. And so how do I connect the personal agency of what I do in my business and what I can control into this broader realm of, you know, context that is moving around me?
And the way that I see it is there's I almost call it like a less is more type of focus, mm-hmm. right? You have to know what your consumers are, because the numbers do tell a story, right? They tell a massive story. And I challenge people all the time to stay away from the news. And some of the numbers that we quote are more national numbers. You've got to know your micro. You've got to know your local numbers, right? The difference from county to county, right? Even where we are in the northern DMV area, right? Crossing borders, right? From state to state. There's a huge impact to what is actually happening. Right. Changing from Fairfax County to Loudoun County, Prince William County, Prince George's counties. How well do you know your local economy about businesses, about telecommuting, right? And the conversations that you're having with your consumers about long-term growth. If you understand that, and then you look at, okay, here's my personal business growth model. It might be saying, hey, if I specialize in County X, do I have a business partner? Do I have the bandwidth to go into county Y, right? It's not necessarily that I need to be over there, but do I have the right who to be over there? People have talked about expansion and growth. And to me, it's the success is being more micro than that. Own your territory, grow your territory map, right? And strategically, like in Arizona at the time, I could cover a 20, 30 mile radius relatively simply. That was 07. I cannot well enough cover a 30-mile radius in Northern Virginia. So do I have the business acumen and understanding? Probably, because I can get my hands on the data. Do I have the relationships 30 miles out? Not as well as I do 5 to 10 miles out. Do I have the business partners that are licensed in connecting jurisdictions that understand them better than I do? So I could turn around and say, hey, Bo, I've got a guy in Baltimore that needs to do this, or I've got a guy right out in Lorton that needs to do this, or Gainesville that needs to do this. You're my guy. Right? So do I have those types of relationships so I can be hyper local and have a footprint that takes me a little bit further out? And I think it's the inverse of what people look at because of the technology understanding that we have, to think that I can do more because I have that visual bandwidth looking out, where you couldn't do it before. But I'm saying double down local with an understanding of a more wider a wider feel, wider footprint.
So what might be the connection points, right? So if you've got this macro data and then you've got some more localized data. So one way I can use that is in how I advise my clients, right? Mm-hmm. What about from a business planning standpoint? What would you take away from the broader context of information around interest rates, home sales, et cetera, that would actually affect your business plan for 2025? Like, where would you see those connections?
Yes, what I see is this, you're going to have pockets, right? I almost have to silo my understanding of my business of where are my people going, right? Because I might find that a lot of my people are moving out of the area, right? There's so much, the new construction, what type of new construction is actually happening? Is it single family homes? Is it condos? Is it townhomes? How does that affect my business, right? Because if that's the new construction side, then, okay, maybe there's an opportunity for me to get back in to the new home buyer market, because that I was going to be looking at. Or are those communities more because if we know 65 and up, maybe my area has a large contingent of that, right? They now start looking at downsizing. So are the active adult communities, elevator accessible homes, single level homes, is there a desire to move into those locations? Or is it the move up market where they want to get into single family, but necessarily can't? On the flip side of that, what businesses in my area? So again, I'll look at Ashburn, Virginia. There's a large footprint of data centers, if you haven't noticed, going up all over Loudoun County, right? How does that affect the people that live in those established single family communities that are surrounded? What's the breaking point for them? What's the breaking point for data centers that start buying out communities? What's the driving point for the people that live in those communities to go, maybe it's time for me to go further out or further in, right? Maybe I downsize into and live in more of an urban environment. That's why I keep going back. So when I'm looking at the numbers have to be siloed. They can't be generalistic.
And can they help start to tell us, right? So we can look at this question and say, well, what do the numbers tell us about, I mean, what I heard from you, Dave, is I should look at my lead generation funnels, right? And we know that all great real estate agents predominantly get most of their business from 2 to 3 like lead sources. So if one of my, so I have the opportunity to target my lead sources to those that are most likely to move. So if part of my marketing strategy was, let me have you upgrade your home to a larger, you know, single family home, this might actually be a fairly difficult time for that strategy because I'm locked in at a low rate, right? I have equity, but to get into the new home, I'm going to have to pay a higher interest rate, losing my low interest rate, and my cost of funds is going to go up, and that might not work for me. So a move-up strategy, if that's my main business, that's one of my funnels, maybe I'm saying, okay, well, I also have a strategy here around probate, right? Well, people aren't dying less than they died before, right? Or if I had a strategy around first-time home buyers and my marketing strategy was to go to wedding conventions and work with wedding planners, well, there's probably the same amount of marriages going on in the United States this year that there were last year. So there are ways, I'm trying to get like real detail here, that you could tie these macro things that seem really big into like, okay, what do I actually do, right? And part of what Dave's been talking about is, hey, there's a core set of business that's going to be happening. It's going to keep happening. And how do I tap into that? There's also a question, what's the market of the moment? And I think we're likely going to see a market of the moment where if you are in this business actively in 23, early 24, you have a bunch of clients who did decide to marry the house and date the rate. So what's that opportunity to follow up with all those people when interest rates get to a point where it's in their interest to refinance? And how does that touch point become a lead generation source for you and your business?
And you bring up a really good point. And I talk to this often. I'm like, how well do you stay in touch with your people, right? Whether you sold them a house or not, but how well do you truly know them? Do you know what their rates are? Because you should, and you need to. And that's a driving factor. It's a huge motivational point for them. If you don't know what their rates are or what their long-term goals are, they might be sitting and going, you know, I'm sitting on 6.5. The moment it drops sub 6, I'm probably ready to go. Or I'm at 7 or 7.5. Refinance sounds nice, but I'd really rather be here. But are you having those conversations with people? Or did you leave them at the closing table and you haven't talked to them in 2 years?
Mm-hmm. We're moving. One of the things that's changing in our world, like there's been lots of talk about the disintermediation of real estate agents, and it hasn't happened. Like, people still see value in the work we do, right? And want to sell their home with a human being for the vast majority of people. But there is a trend that is moving quickly in the world of being a consumer. And you know it because all of us know it because we experience it as consumers. And that is that the people and organizations that we work with have a much more complete profile of our life. And today's consumer is used to being offered what is the predictive analytics of what they would do, right? We go online and we're offered the thing people think we're going to buy. If we search a whole bunch of stuff, all of a sudden that pop-up ads start being a different type of thing. You start searching vacations and airline flights, and next thing you know, a whole bunch of fancy resorts are going to start randomly showing up in your Instagram feed or whatever. And we live in a world where the information that businesses have and the depth of that information about consumers is evolving rapidly. And I think the biggest kind of, this is something Joe Martin and I talk about all the time, one of the biggest failures or and also biggest opportunity in our industry is we touch people in an important transition point in their life. And we work with them through a set of information about them that is highly important in the rest of the things that they do in their life. Yet we don't capture or profile our clients on that information. So back to the simple point Dave was making, we don't know what their interest rate is. We don't. So if you knew their interest rate, you could do a very simple calculation and figure out when it's in their interest to refinance. But think about how far you could take this. If we knew what type of refrigerator they had, and we knew that during the home inspection, they've been told they needed to replace their roof in 4 years, we could actually be the true advisor to them around protecting, enhancing, and maintaining their asset. And I think that's where the world's going, because we as consumers are experiencing that. I no longer go to a specialist when I need them. I interact with platforms that serve my needs in a specific area. So I no longer go to the pet store to get pet food and to the produce store to get produce. And I no longer have a milkman deliver my milk. I go to Amazon to buy personal products. And all those things get delivered to my house within a couple hours, right? So business is moving to category fillers, and category fillers that have information about the customer and use that information to anticipate the customer's needs and serve them. So the question I'd ask all of us is, how are we in our industry having the information about our customers to anticipate their needs so that we can serve their needs before they have to raise their hand and come to us and say, I have this problem?
It's interesting, that data information, that the power of home, and we've talked about that a couple of times. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, I think, when I look at most agents and the conversations we have, and as we kind of wrap, I kind of say, like, Bo, if you're going back and you've got relationships with people, how are you having this conversation, or how are you coaching agents that are building the business now? Like, how are you saying, here's why this is so important? Let me explain to you, right? That asset of yours, your database, is everything.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that database is the information you have. And then you're augmenting that with a personal relationship, right? And so to me, the question is, am I making my intent and my come from clear in how I'm engaging the people that are in my world or the people that might come into my world? And I think historically we have been very good at saying, hey, here's a bunch of houses. You want to buy a house? Like, this is cool. Like, let me tell you about the features of this house. Right? We've sold surface product. And we've hoped that by putting the product out there, those who had a reason or a need for that product showed up and bought that product. And I think we're moving to a world where instead of, so you think about it, today our product, if you will, is homes for sale and sellers. But we're actually, I think, moving to a world where our product is homeowners. And so therefore, I have to have a value proposition to a homeowner. I need to be able to call up a homeowner and say, here's how I can help you. And if I do that, all of a sudden, my lead generation funnel doesn't happen just in that one teeny little period every 5 to 7 or 8 to 9 years when someone's ready to move. Now I can actually attract and into my closest circle, homeowners, knowing that at some point in the next 5 to 7 years, maybe next year, maybe the year after, maybe 5 years from now, I don't know, those people are going to move. And so my value proposition and my come from has to be, how can I help you? Versus, I have a product, do you want to buy it?
Yeah.
So I think that's the shift of the conversation.
I think you're right. And I think if you look at the agents, the realtors that have been in business for a while, have found a way to kind of do that to a degree, right? To be that person. Like, I can't tell you how many phone calls I've gotten. I need a painter, a carpenter, a roofer, a landscaper, like, because of the relationships that I've maintained. Or, hey, they put it on Facebook, so therefore I reach directly out to them. But you're saying, let's take that even a step forward. We blog, we know all this information, and we start just kind of feeding them on their behalf. There's not so different than when we do get a home inspection. I have, what a lot of the companies starting to do? Well, they'll say, hey, there's these recalls of these products of this house that you just did. Well, what if you managed that side of things for the consumer, right? A low thing, if you knew what the fridge was or their microwave, their dishwasher, or even their automobile, and you sent that information out to them, right?
We've been driving value and relationship. We've been driving, well, let's call it relationship. I don't even call it value. We've been driving relationship with our customers through...
Bo, can you come a little closer to your mic there?
Yeah, we've been driving relationship with our customers a lot of times through, like, trinkets. Here's pies for Thanksgiving. Here's our, you know, here's the football schedule for the football season, which are all things that are helpful to people, but they're not really core. We've sold frills at times, not to maintain relationship. When there are core issues, your homeowner, yeah, they'd love a pie for Thanksgiving, but they need to heat their house. They need to rake their leaves. They need to clean their gutters so there's not a problem, their house doesn't leak. You know, they'd love to have a football. They'd love to have a football schedule or a baseball schedule in the spring, but they do need to change their heating and cooling system over from heating to cooling as they move into the warmer months.
Yeah. Right?
They likely have emergency repairs in their home that they need to make, right? They would benefit from knowing when is the right time to refinance their home. So if I start to change my relationship strategy to be based not around nice to haves, but around the must haves the consumer must have around their home, then all of a sudden I increase my level of relationship and I increase my value proposition and I become less replaceable.
So if you look through your database and all the relationships that you have, how often or how deliberately do you think agents need to be having these conversations, and how are they tracking that information? How do they take action with that information?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the biggest challenges. It's been the biggest challenge for me in my life. Like, I feel like I have this set of relationships, set of databases, but it's very hard to be intentional. Like, we often are very reactive in the way we react to relationships. This one's struggling today, or someone having a problem. And that usually means that more of our time goes to fighting fires than to proactively getting things done. So my sense is, you want to understand, first thing is to get a database and actually be real on who are the real people in your database and who aren't. Who actually sees you as the person that they would call first about anything having to do with their home? Let's start with those people. And then let's try to increase that number of people that see us that way. And for those people, let's have a series of touch points that relate to the things that they're going to need to live in their home and to make their lives great. And then let's get more people into relationship with us in that way. So actionable, I think, is let's figure out what your touches are. Maybe they don't have to be thousands of them. You know, can you do a monthly touch to your clients? And is that touch related to something of value that's core or value that's kind of on the edges? I start asking myself that question. Are my value propositions core or are they on the edges? When I show up and have a meeting with someone, you know, having a nice office or my car being clean or taking them on, being able to organize the tour, those are kind of table stakes type of things. But what is the value proposition I have that's core to their thing? Can I sit down with them in my buyer consultation and actually inform them fully through a partner of what their financing options are? How well have I researched the areas, as Dave said? Am I putting in front of them the price appreciation growth in the different counties that they're looking at? Right? Like, how am I taking core pieces of value that I have from information, data that I have about them and that I have about the industry, and how am I delivering that at the right time? So I would go into the year and think about how can I deliver a core number of touches. Maybe it's only three or four, but that they're really core to what's going on with that individual. You know, we're coming to the end of the year. It's tax time. You know, everybody's going to have to do something with the taxes of their house. They're going to need to know if they bought last year, what was their HUD-1. They're going to need to know if they didn't, what's their taxes and insurance. Like, what are ways that we can make life easier for people, knowing when, putting ourselves in their shoes and saying, when are they going to think about something that has to do with their house? And when can we make sure they think about us when they think about that something that's about their house?
You know, that there, I joke a lot about, hey, you know, sending out these recipe cards, or hey, don't remind her to clean your gutters, or remember to do this. But the difference that you're saying is, like, okay, if we recognize it's time to clean the gutters, what if we said, hey, here's our guy, we're willing to send them out to you, or here's a coupon, or whatever that looks like, right? You know, twice a year I have my sprinkler systems checked and my furnace in EC. If I establish a relationship with those companies to go out to my core people, or maybe, and then maybe a discount for the next group of people as I build those relationships, right? That's that extra level that sets you apart. Pies are nice. I love them, right? Don't get me wrong. Everybody loves a good pie, but that's yesterday. But if I know twice a year that my additional ancillary services are touching base with my consumers, because I'm the tip of that spear, that's a different conversation. That's an actionable conversation.
You can think about it in three different levels, right? Level one, I do something nice for you, therefore you remember me, right? That's what a pie is. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be hungry, but so it's just basically a nice thing. I'm doing something nice so that you remember me. Number two is I inform you of a situation that's important to you. So I could inform someone that they're going to need to collect these papers for the end of the year. I could inform some people that the clocks are going to move back. I could inform some people that it's time to clean the leaves out of their gutters, right? I could inform them that they could refinance into a different rate. The next level of it, though, is to anticipate the problem and have the solution. As Dave said, I don't just inform you that your gutters need to be cleaned. I clean your gutters.
Right.
I don't just tell you you should refinance your house. I do the math and I actually refinance your house for you, right? So moving to a place where the consumer has a concierge-like service around their home is, I think, one way to think of it. But more from a marketing standpoint, you should know when you're making an offer for connection that's just a nice, like, hey, it's a gift. We should know when we're making an offer that's informative. We should know when we're making an offer that's a solution.
You know, and I look at it this way. I get a lot of questions about, hey, how do I do this? How do I do the other thing? And what I have started in, if you're asking me this question, then other people have the same question. So I might put out a how-to or a video or reach out to people and say, hey, this was brought to my awareness. People, when we're saying reach out and understand about the consumers in your database and what they have going, I'm not telling you to call somebody, hey, Bo, I just wanted to, hey, what was the age of that water heater? What was the age of your furnace? You know, when was the last time you got the sun? Like, that's not what we're talking about. But the difference is saying, hey, Bo, you know, I just have, you know, my house is 23 years old and all of a sudden I was getting high CO2 ratings from my fireplace because the glass and the seals went bad. I remember that your house was built in 98 and had a fireplace. I just wanted to tell you about this for me and this guy that I had that could come over and he's offering this. Those are two completely different conversations where people are paralyzed by fear to pick up the phone and take action with the information that's available, or flipping the script and making it relatable like a piece of pie, right? That they can digest, but you're connecting emotionally with them, not just collecting data.
Yeah, no, I love it. So, like, I think the last part of this is that we have to, in challenging times, get our heads around interpreting the data. So in a time of change or in any sort of stressful time, human beings have, you know, naturally fight or flight responses. We also have freeze responses, which in business oftentimes is the one that shows up the most. People just freeze. We don't do anything. We keep doing what we were doing before. Just kind of stay static. And I think the question here is, every time I get a piece of outside data, every time I go and I go to a conference or I listen to an economic report or I see this thing, I should be asking the question, how do I operationalize this in my business to to move me in the direction of where things are moving. And so I think that mindset that says, I'm going to take sometimes incomplete information, but I'm going to figure out how in the core things that are the basic core principles, foundation of my business, I can do what I'm doing, do that core business well in light of this information that I have. And how can I adjust and pivot and move as I'm going forward to not just be a victim of the situation and a victim of the circumstance, but to be an architect of my business within the context of the circumstance.
I completely agree. And here's the thing. I think people are paralyzed by the data. So collect data. It's tech. No, it's the actions that the data leads to that heightens your level of relationship with your consumer, which is all we've ever always talked about. Who are you to them? Are you their person? And what level is your relationship with them? The data tells you where you need to be, when you need to be there, but still be you.
100%.
All right. Well, everybody, Bo, as always, it's a pleasure to have you join us on Entrepreneurial Impact. I hope you guys all got some actionable items and say, hey, over the next quarter, I'm looking at my goals for next year. And one of those goals is, what kind of data is in my database that is accessible and actionable for continued successful growth? Have a great day, everybody.